Blog Talk Radio.
Angela Butler. Today the interview is with Mr. Tim Alexander. He has a documentary that's in the works, and some of it he's been touring the country in recent years, within a recent year or two, about legal death, and it's concerning prescription drugs. How are you this morning, Mr. Alexander?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. I can hear you very well.
Great.
Okay. So, now, your cousin, Ms. Karen Alexander, was killed by her husband.
Yes. Yes, her name was actually, she's referred to as Karen Smith.
Karen Smith, okay. Thank you for correcting me, sir. I'm sorry that happened. I know it must be very painful.
Yes.
But I would like for you to tell it in your own words.
Well,
How it came about, how it's related to prescription drugs.
Okay. Karen Smith, my cousin, she married a childhood friend of mine. And the man is also the minister that married my wife and I. It turns out that after they got married, he performed our wedding. She was at the wedding. And our wedding was so beautiful, they decided to get married shortly after dating for 4 years. When they got married, my sons were the ring bearers in the wedding. And about a month and a half after they married, she went to live with her parents, back with her parents, because he was acting erratically. About a month later, he calls. I've been speaking to him every day and says, she cheated. I left for 2 hours and came back. There were pubic hairs in the shower. That means she cheated. And he described these pubic hairs for 30 minutes to my wife and I. 2 days later, he went and killed her. He was a Navy war vet. They said he had PTSD. They had him on 5 psych meds. And after investigating the meds, the unifying symptoms were agitation, which is what drove her away, hallucinations, which is what made him believe he saw the pubic hairs. And so that's what happened. He went and he killed her because his mind had slapped.
Yes, sir. Okay. So, Miss, your cousin, Ms. Karen Smith, Ms. Alexander, and her husband, I believe, Mr. Cedric Anderson, who also killed himself and a child?
Yes.
It was a double murder-suicide? Okay.
Right.
My understanding? Okay. So, how did prescription drugs come into the effect where you say, you have a documentary, you've been on numerous shows and toured across the country, is my understanding from Dr. Baker. and from what I've read and researched, that and your wife is also a Miss Karen, but she's a Miss Karen Alexandra. How does the drug, prescription drug, how did this make you believe that prescription drugs was caused him to do this? Kill your cousin, a child that later died in the hospital, and itself. Will you please go into that, please, sir?
Whether you want to or not, if you look at television at all, you're going to see a plethora of commercials extolling the virtues of these drugs and all the wonderful things they can do for you. And before they finish those extended commercials, they spend about a third of them telling you what they can do to destroy you. Suicidal ideations can cause thoughts of suicide, can cause agitation, can cause irritability, can cause hallucinations. Those things sound like something to ignore, because they then come right behind and say, ask your doctor if this is right for you. You go into your doctor, you say, I'm depressed, and within 5-10 minutes, they write a prescription. There's no test. They don't test your blood. They don't do anything. They talk to you. Then they say, yeah, you can take these. And almost everybody who does has a dramatic effect in their moods, their temperament, their disposition. I've got 400 hours of people saying how they wanted to kill themselves, kill other people around them, you know, kill their neighbors, kill their spouses. It literally destroys their life. These drugs are incredibly, tells you right on the packaging that they can make you suicidal. For some reason, people just don't really believe it's going to happen to them. And that is the problem. It will happen to them, more than likely. Because if you look at all these murders and suicides, school shootings, mothers killing their children, husbands killing their wives, so often they're on these prescription drugs. And you can't look at the same pattern over and over and over and not see a pattern that needs to be looked at. So if the package is telling you that it could make you suicidal, what it doesn't say is if you're suicidal, you're also homicidal. If you don't care about killing yourself, you definitely don't care about killing the people around you that you care about. When students shoot, they're not shooting anybody in particular. They're not shooting anybody they're mad at. They just go to school because that's something that's close to them, and they shoot. Husbands kill their wives and their husbands. Parents kill their children. People go to work and shoot. They stab. They usually attack something that is close to them that they can relate to. In this particular case, when his wife left, he was agitated, which made her leave. He was paranoid, which made him believe that maybe she could cheat. Then he hallucinated his worst fear. He hallucinated that she had cheated, and then he killed her. That is clearly not something that a person does to somebody they love after being with them for 4 years and treating them like a perfect angel. Then all of a sudden, they kill the person and themselves. Now, when you have drugs in your system, it's quite common. It's a very simple pattern to see. 5 meds in the system.
Yes, sir. So, basically, you're saying, which I've already seen some class actions and lawsuits, and some individual lawsuits alleging, and some of them have already been won, that antidepressants in particular do not help with antidepressants, especially in teenagers, that it makes them more suicidal. I've seen those lawsuits. I've seen the commercials. I've seen it online. I've seen them on TV about the lawsuit attorneys saying, call this law firm that's making teenagers suicidal. I know that some of the drugs are going breast in young men. I think it's Risperdal. Young men go breast. And I also know that there's a drug called Zyprexa that made people become diabetic because it caused increased weight gain. So I know that it's being proven that this is what the prescription drugs are doing. But what's the answer? I mean, is there a realistic answer that people can come up with? I mean, I know we were talking on the phone. You said, well, somebody that's trying to study for a major exam in college or something shouldn't be put on these drugs. Could you give some more in your opinion, either your opinion, of why you believe that there are a lot of times that these drugs are not needed, that they're being overprescribed?
They're being overprescribed because people are not being taught to deal with life. I'm 59 years old. Life has never been easy. It wasn't easy in prehistoric times. It wasn't easy in biblical times, medieval times, during the Civil War, during the March for Freedom from Slavery. Life has never been easy. Now people are sold a bill of goods by very slick advertising and marketing all over the television by pharmaceutical companies that if you take this pill, all your problems can melt away. It doesn't work like that. You know, you're never going to not feel any pain. And if you do, you're going to pay a price for it later. You're never going to have anxiety, even the way the word anxiety is used. Anxiety is a legitimate word. What it means is you're anxious. You can be anxious about getting married, anxious about your new puppy that you're going to get. You can be anxious about somebody who's about to break up with you. And guess what? If you wait 6 months, that anxiety is going to go away anyway, just naturally, because as life moves you back and forth, you shift with life. Now people don't want to shift with life. They don't want to go through the arc. They just want to take a pill and just make it go away. What it does is it numbs your senses. It numbs your brain. And it also sets you up for disaster because they're highly, you build a dependency, a very intense dependency, because they now become a new part of your brain chemistry. And they're not something that your brain normally has. They're not chemicals that were normally endemic to your brain. So it is a very slippery slope to take a highly toxic drug to deal with life's ups and downs. Life is to be dealt with, not medicated away. You can't do that. And if you try to, you're usually going to suffer. Every drug you take, whatever you took it for, it makes that problem worse in time. At first, they think they're getting better because they're completely numb. I've had people say they lost their ability to feel. They lost their ability to love. They couldn't love their children. They couldn't love their spouse. They said they couldn't even connect or love God because these pills have them so numb. They literally override your spirit, and they take over. Everybody knows what getting too drunk can be. These are far, far more invasive than getting drunk. And when the person's drunk, they can wreck their car. They can have sex with somebody they never intended to. They can do all kinds of things. These are far, far stronger. They just don't make you act visibly as ridiculous as a drunk person. But emotionally and psychologically, you're completely controlled by the substances. Now a lot of DUIs, driving under the influence, are not alcohol. They're driving under the influence of prescription drugs that your doctor gave you that you took correctly, because they can literally make you out of control. We saw Tiger Woods. You know, when he drove his car onto the sidewalk, he wasn't drunk. He had medications in his system. So, yes, these drugs are absolutely proven beyond any shadow of a doubt to be very disruptive to a person's life. And the solution to not getting into that quagmire, the only solution is to not take them. If I told you this is arsenic, it's very poison. If you take it, you will die. If you take it, then you will likely die. And that best solution to not die from arsenic is to not put arsenic in your mouth. So the best solution to not have an antidepressant or benzodiazepine or a fluoroquinolone or statin or any of these other drugs that go straight into your central nervous system, the best solution to not have them damage you is to not ingest them. It's that simple. And there's no better answer. You have to just, you know, pull up your britches and deal with life.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and homeopathic solutions, usually the solutions are better diets. Most people are torqued up on a lot of high fructose corn syrup, a lot of glyphosate in the food, And what they are not realizing is, yes, if you want to call it a chemical balance, there's a lot of artificial processing in our food which adds chemicals that are unnatural to the food in its natural state. Now they're making us pay extra for organic, and even some of that is not what it should be. So a lot of people are having literal chemical reactions to the very food they ate. They're not getting enough greens and vitamin-rich food. They're getting a lot of fat and a lot of sugar and a lot of artificial coloring and artificial ingredients. And it's making them feel they have symptoms that aren't nearly as severe as what they think they are. The symptoms that they experience are not as severe as the drugs they take to try to fix them. And often the doctors are very happy to misdiagnose over anything. 85% of the people we interviewed, we've interviewed a couple hundred people already, 85% of the people we've interviewed never had a psychological problem when they were put on psych drugs. They would have things like, my period didn't start at the right time. Here, let me give you a benzodiazepine. I broke up with my boyfriend or girlfriend. Let me give you an antidepressant. You know, my dog died. Okay, here's a drug for that. You know, I have a test. I have a new job. It's stressing me out. Let me give you a drug for that. Everything, they're giving you a drug for it. They're giving you everything that can happen in your life. They have a disorder for it in the DSM, the Diagnostical Statistical Manual, which is what the doctors and psychiatrists use. And they will medicate you for anything. If you fart too much, they'll have a drug for that. And everything goes to your central nervous system. Once it's in your central nervous system, it's in complete control of all of you. You can't put something in your central nervous system without giving it the password to your whole brain's computer. They can go in and reset everything because you no longer can control yourself. Your central nervous system is compromised. And that's what these drugs do. So the best solution is a better diet and deal with life. Because 85% of the people we interviewed did not have a psychological problem. But once they took these drugs, now they very, very much do. And that's it. You know, they're making a lot of money by prescribing a lot of drugs. And profit over concern. They're not there to actually care about your quality of life. These big multinational corporations with shareholders are not there to care if you're not depressed. They're there to care about profits. And they have no soul when it comes to people.
This is totally unrelated. Just about, I'm looking at your Facebook page, Legal Death and Drugs We Trust. And I'm looking at a photo of a man in a red hot. That's you, isn't it? That's not Mr. Keith Davis from Greenleaf, is it?
That's Keith David. It says Keith David right under the picture.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought it was him. I was in Greenleaf sometimes. About 7, 8 shows of Greenleaf. I thought that was Mr. Keith David. So he's with you for this?
It says right under his name in the picture.
I cannot hear you, sir.
I said it says right under his picture. It says narrated by Keith David.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. I don't see that. It's not on there on my screen, but I'm sure it's there. I just don't see it. Okay.
Okay.
So, sir, like I said, I'm sorry that happened, but you also talked to me over the phone about something else, about the police killings. Now, some civil rights groups will not agree with this, okay? Most of them won't. They're saying that is racism, that is outright murder, what the police are doing by killing people, killing black Americans in particular. Now, would you tell the people who will listen to this show what your theory on this is, if you believe?
Police are people too. They're only human. If these drugs are so powerful that they can make you kill your child, kill your loved ones, kill yourself, if they're that powerful, and a police officer is taking them, they're just as human as everybody else. And stress makes people react. When they're stressed, they snap. So a lot of police are taking medication because they have PTSD, because they have high stress job situations where they're literally chasing criminals in life and death situations. They have developed this mantra of, I want to go home. It's burned into their brain. Every time you see anything happen, they always say, I wanted to go home. So their desire to go home is so strong that they really don't care if somebody else doesn't go home. It's either them or the other person. Now, when your reasoning and your rationale,
you're saying that you have seen videos, I've seen television, news outlets have actually shown police officers saying after someone is murdered or killed, homicide, whatever word you want to use, death and murder, is that they just want to go home, get it over with, and go home to retire.
I mean, that's simplifying it a bit. That's simplifying it a bit, but in essence, yeah, you constantly see police officers saying, I fear for my life. You know, my goal when I go to work is to go home. So they overreact. They lose empathy. When you're on these medications, you lose your ability to empathize. You don't care about others. You only start to care about yourself. And so if you have a gun, and you're a white officer that drove 30 miles into a black neighborhood around big, scary black men that you know don't like you, and you're fearful of someone and you have a gun and you have no empathy, you also have a drug that can make you kill your own child and kill your own spouse in your system, and you have a gun and there's this big black guy over there and you know that you're a cop and you have the system on your side, it's very easy to pull the trigger. And we've seen police say, I thought I saw a gun. I thought I saw a gun. Remember the hallucinations? Cedric thought he saw pubic hairs. So if a cop tells a man sitting in the car to get his license and the man reaches into his back pocket, looks like he was pulling a gun out of the seat, so I killed him so I can go home.
Okay. Okay, I get it. I get where this is coming from.
Yeah, because your ability to filter and rationalize and deal with reality and look at things clearly is completely muted. You're disconnected.
You're numb, basically.
Yeah, and nobody has more job stress than police officers. I mean, how much more stressful can a job get?
Yes, sir, I understand that. I was going to say that I know that sometimes I've seen on television shows the scenario where the wife is telling her husband, you know, just come home, just be careful and make sure you come home to me and your children and me, things like that. So that's what's in their mind to go home, to make it through their day alive. So, all right, I get where that's coming from.
That's what happens.
Then you believe medication, but post-traumatic stress syndrome is what's causing you.
I know it does. And, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome is a loose manufactured title, and it's not always the case. You know, and police seem more fearful than ever. They very rarely seem to want to use their hands and grapple and deal with the situation the way they did back in the day. They just want to stand at a safe distance and just release bullets. And not one or two bullets, but 10 or 15. You know, and we see constantly when people are on these drug rampages, they don't just shoot one time, they just empty their guns. And so it's the same kind of scenario. Why would you have to shoot a person 18, 20 times? You know, that's just obsessive. That means you snapped. You normally shoot one time and you look and see if you did enough to stop the person. You don't have to kill a person because you're scared of them or because you told them to stop walking and they didn't stop walking. And so you decide to take their life and say you feared for your life because they were walking away from you with no weapon. That's absurd.
Okay.
How do you see somebody,
you know,
in the back is walking
rights
away from you?
Civil rights groups are going to say, no, these white officers are flat out, plain out, murdering people.
I don't care what they say. You know, that's easy to say. I mean, you know, you can play the black victim card, maybe, maybe not. But even still, a person could, let's play advocate. Okay, say the person was racist. They still wouldn't do it if the drugs weren't fueling them. Think about it. It's one thing to be a racist and go and you may rough somebody up. You may be in jail for a little bit of nothing, but you're not going to pull out your gun and just assassinate them. But if you're medicated, you might, you know, because now your filter is gone. And we see people acting crazy on the airplanes. That's because they're on medication. Their filter is gone. They no longer can be in society and act like a normal, rational person. A lot of the homeless people you see talking to themselves, they're actually on drugs because the system gives them psych drugs and they're let out of mental institutions and they're out in the street. And a lot of them are not necessarily broke homeless people. Some of them are people that have homes and had careers who are so zonked out from the medication, they end up wandering in the streets until they deteriorate. These are very real situations.
Yes, sir. I understand what you say. I understand where that would come from. Okay, so, all right. So we're going to take a little break here, okay? Mr. Alexander, play a little music for a minute or two and come back and let you finish talking, all right?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. Don't hang up now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. This is Mr. Kim Alexander. He's working on his documentary for Legal Death. He's been on numerous shows and is advocating for a documentary. Also, he has a fun crowd page and things like that for you to donate to. He has a Facebook page. Talk Legal Death and Trust. So if you would like to donate, I guess the best way would be to go to his FundMe. You still have your FundMe account, sir?
No. They can just go to the Legal Death Facebook page.
Okay, if you want to donate, that would be the way to do it. Also,
the Legal Death group page.
Yes, sir. This is Kim Alexander. All right, let's go to break. Listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, you're listening to Mr. Alexandra. He is pushing for the documentary Legal Death. It goes deep. He did research 200 people, did surveys on them and things like that. And the story is pretty much the same from each person. All right, Mr. Alexandra, sir. So your cousin, Miss Karen Smith, was killed by her husband, Mr. Cedric Alex Anderson, and he committed suicide on the spot. And a child also died later in the hospital.
Yes.
And your wife is also named Karen, Miss Karen Alexander, and you, Mr. Kim and Karen Alexander are executive producers. And you've been speaking for both of them.
Yes.
Okay.
And can you hear me okay?
How, yes, sir, I can. And you're basically have been finding out about how medication had affected Mr. Cedric Anderson before
right.
he went
right.
into your cousin, Ms. Karen Smith, was a school teacher.
Yes.
I believe special needs. And he went into the school and murdered her. Okay, and you're saying that it was the medication. So would you like to go deeper into that? If it's up to
well,
you.
We already kind of covered that. There's not a whole lot much more to say about that. That's really a secondary storyline because now the film originally was called Why Did It Happen? Why Did Cedric Kill Karen? It's been renamed Legal Death and Drugs We Trust because it's not about Cedric and Karen. It's about everybody.
Everybody.
Can be affected by these, yeah. So that's really
affected by these drugs.
That's the subtext, and that was the starting point, but that's no longer the main driving force behind the series.
About the pharmaceutical companies that is money, is greed, because I believe they made like almost $1 trillion 1 year in drugs
yes.
worldwide.
And my goal is to warn the people that are still alive that haven't taken them.
Yes, sir. I understand that. And, you know, the antidepressants, it's been proven that they're not helping people not be depressed. That the uppers aren't. I believe they're called SSRIs. I'm not certain. But they're not helping.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. They're not helping people, especially teenagers. Teenagers are being put on antidepressants, and they're killing themselves. The suicide rate has really increased here in America. Some people say they're not on the drugs. Some people say when you're watching shows and things that they got off the drugs or they needed to be on the drugs. Just, you know, it's three different theories to everything. Some people say, oh, they were evil. You know, but regardless,
well, most people haven't done enough research.
Those SSRIs are not having, especially with teenagers, with the antidepressants aren't helping them. It's making them more depressed. That's
it's not helping adults. It's not really any worse in teenagers than as adults. It just depends on who's looking at it. And it's more egregious
yes,
when
sir.
It's a teenager because they're young and they're innocent. But it affects everybody equally. And they are not helping people. If you take something to help you and it doesn't help, that means it doesn't work. And if it makes you worse off than you were before you took it, that means not only doesn't it work, it means it's damaging. And this is a cautionary tale. This is a warning. Because I'm saying what the doctors don't, because the doctors often don't know it. And right now it's been shown that 75% of the medical students are taking these same drugs. And they don't know any better. Because they believe what Big Pharma says because they don't understand them. So you're getting things from doctors who will tell you they don't know how they work in the brain. They just know that this is what the FDA approved and said to give you for this condition. That's a dangerous situation. Also, it's been shown that doctors are the number one profession that is committing suicide at the higher rate by far than any other profession. Doctors' life expectancy is 56 years. They're jumping off the roofs of the hospitals. They're going home and killing themselves and killing their families. And these are doctors who are taking these drugs. Some doctors even steal the drugs and take them. There are nurses taking them. We've interviewed multiple nurses, you know, and people who even ran mental health facilities who are victims of the very drugs that they gave other people. So they don't know. So how in the world can you go get good advice from somebody that has no clue what these things are, what they do? They're on them themselves, and they can't even control their own lives. Doctors, just like police, are just people. If they take these drugs, they'll be just as damaged as anybody else, no matter what age. They're also giving them to infants. They're giving them to children in foster care. They're giving them to soldiers, prisoners. They're giving them to old people in the rest homes and killing them. They're everywhere.
Yes, sir, I understand what you're saying. That I've known or seen on TV, not necessarily knew them, but saw on television where a doctor had killed themselves. I killed their family. I have seen things like that. All right.
That's the reason why so many older people are falling and breaking their hips. So these drugs go off your equilibrium. They make you dizzy. They make your bones brittle. They're often taking muscle relaxers, which also have a dramatic effect on you emotionally and psychologically. And those also, they weaken you. They fall over. Their bones are brittle from the drugs, and their hips break. And shortly after, they die.
So I was reading your Facebook page, Legal Death and Drugs to Trust. A gentleman posted here. It's a published link. Mr. Forbear shared the link. Governor, it says doctors should be ashamed. Subscribers can also be held liable for not discussing information about medical risk so that patients can give information consent for medical treatments and procedures. Now, that I believe is true. I'm not a lawyer, not an attorney, don't have a PhD, but I believe that's true.
It's called informed consent. Informed consent is where a doctor sits down and tells you every potential risk that these drugs can cause and make sure you understand it thoroughly, and then has you sign off that you understand the risk and you willingly took it. Instead, they just say, no, this is fine. You ask, is this going to have any side effects or any downside? Nope, you'll be fine. Just take it. You'll be okay. And then they take it, and then their life is forever ruined. And we've had people 20, 30, 40 years trying to get off these drugs, and they can't. Because if you try to get off, not only do you feel miserable, you go straight psychotic in many cases. And a lot of these deaths are when people weren't on their meds. They say, oh, they killed because they weren't on their meds. You feel horrible on them. And if for some reason, either by choice or because you didn't have access to the drugs or your doctor changes your medication, you instantly go psychotic and suicidal in many, many, many cases. I have so many people say they had to fight to not kill themselves. They had to fight. They had to beg. They had to call people. People had to stay up with them all night long to keep them from killing themselves. This is a very real situation. And this is directly from the drugs.
Yes, I know that a lot of times people say, without my medication, I cannot function. Without my medication, and people think, oh, they're just going to become drug addicts.
But before that medication, you would have functioned just fine. Yeah, and you would have been more functional if you never took the medication.
But that's not what's happening. People are killing themselves.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
You would have been far more functional if you never took the medication. But once you take it, then you cannot function without it because it leaches in, it takes control, it rewires a lot of things in your body, and your chemistry is altered to forevermore need that. Everybody understands a crackhead. We've been seeing crackheads for years. Oh, I smoked crack one time. Oh, I never felt better. It was amazing. Then they can't stop. And they smoke it and smoke it and smoke it until they become skinny and they're out selling their body for $5 and then they die. And we call them a crackhead and keep it moving. It's no different. Once you introduce this to your body says, I must have this or I cannot function. It's like a heroin addict. If I don't have this heroin, I'm going to shake, I'm going to quiver, I'm going to feel like I have the flu, I'm going to vomit, I'm going to have diarrhea. I must have heroin in my body. It's the same thing as opioids. Opioids are basically illegal heroin. These drugs, once they get in, you can't get them out. It's really simple. There's no rocket science to why once a person takes these things, they can be damaged and go down a road they can never recover from, because that's what they're designed to do. They only make money when you come back and get another bottle. If they were there to heal you, you take a bottle, you'd be healed, you go on about life, you'd be normal. That's not what they're for.
Yes, sir.
The doctors tell you will never be able to get off of these. You will have to take these for the rest of your life. And basically, when you took the first bottle, you took a life sentence.
Okay. All right. I understand what you're saying. How many of the school shootings were, like in Parkland, Florida? I'm from Florida, sir. I know you're in California. I'm the state of California.
Well, all of them basically except two. That's the numbers I've been finding. I've been finding that all these kids in these major mass shootings, it's one thing when a kid goes to school and has an altercation with another kid and kills that kid. But all the ones, they just walk in and just for no reason just start shooting and going from room to room and killing Every one of them was on meds except for two.
All right. Except for two. Boy, have mercy. Okay. All right. So there's not a whole lot more that we can say. I had found out too about the mass shootings that have made the media, that have really made the news. I too had found out that all but two were, and the gentleman, I believe, in Las Vegas, I believe, was proven that he was on medications, but they're saying his life.
Vegas shooter, the Florida shooter who shot up the game convention, all of them. The Oklahoma bomber was on the drugs. Yeah, they're always there. Because people will start to get psychotic in their mind. The Oklahoma bomber, the guy that shot up the gangman convention in Florida, what happens is their mind goes, and they will concoct a plan. They'll start to feel like these people are evil, or a voice is telling them to do it. And they can fester for months and years before they actually commit the act. It's not a sudden thing all the time. Sometimes they just snap on the instant, and it just happens. Other times, their mind is so demented by these drugs that they'll make plans like getting a bunch of weapons and a lot of ammunition and going and getting a hotel at a big event and shooting as many people as you can. So it happens a lot of different ways. But it's all controlled in the person's brain. It's
altering their brain.
Yes.
Yeah.
It can cause a momentary psychotic state, or it can cause a permanent psychotic state. You know, there are children torturing their animals because they're on drugs as children, and they torture the animals and kill them. They torture their siblings.
They torture their siblings. They torture animals. Is that what you said, sir?
Yes. There's many reported incidents of this happening.
Glory have mercy. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, I thank you for talking and for the research that you have been doing. I believe it's going to help people. Help a lot of people, and I hope you continue, and I wish you much, much success at what you do. I'm sorry that it had to come about this way, though, that you had to do it this way, about your that it happened to your relative, your cousin. It's nothing I can say that will bring her back, but my condolences will always be to you. But I really am glad of what you do. I'm just not glad about the way it came about. That's all, sir.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to take what happens in life and find out what can we do with it that can be positive? How can we take even the worst and do the best that we can with it? Because when things happen, they are irreversible. And all we can do is say, hey, I'll take that and do what I can with it, because it just happened and that's just reality.
Mr. Alexander, I wish you and your wife, Ms. Karen Alexander, I wish you
she's my partner in this. She's a co-executive producer. You know, she's been with me and by my side and helping make this happen when nobody understood it, nobody believed in it. And, you know, it's just as much her sweat equity as it is mine. You know, I'm the main the main voice of it, but she is very, very much a part of it. So, you know, big ups to my wife, Karen Alexander. And, just the two of us. We shot it all. We traveled. We did whatever we had to do to make this happen, and you know, it's our contribution to the world to help keep people safe, and that's all we can do.
Thank you for granting me this interview, sir, and God bless you, Ms. Alexander, and your wife, Ms. Karen Alexander, sir.
Okay, thank you.
You have a blessed day.
Same to you. Goodbye.
You're welcome to come back on. Bye.